So we're on this week, you'll be pleased to know it's not a Harry Brady on his own. We've got Andrew and Stephen on to discuss the latest machinations at Celtic. So, Andrew, Sean Maloney, Mark Fotheringham are now at Celtic Park, ensconced in Celtic Park. The deal was confirmed, was it Thursday, and they started pre-season? Thursday afternoon, they started pre-season training Friday, although I think Maloney was at Lennox Town prepping. So what's your thoughts on everything that went on?
Just, as I said it before, they just know how to, Celtic know how to strain the goodness out of anything. If they'd have signed the deals, whatever it was, whatever the deals they were looking for, if they could have come to some agreement the week after the cup final, people would have accepted it more. But the very fact it drags on, everything drags on. Celtic deals drag on. You have to ask yourself, why do they always drag on? Because, and partly it is the Celtic think, you know, we're muscular in the market. You know, we look after the pennies and the pounds will take care of themselves. But they look after the pennies because they penny pinch, essentially. They'll say, we're going to sweat every pound. That was another Ferguson. You need to sweat your assets, sweat every pound. And maybe they do that. But what do they lose in the process? Well, they certainly lose goodwill. They lose probably a sense of harmony within the camp, because you know that, I've been in Celtic, and you think to yourself, sometimes you think about how bloody parsimonious they are and how much everything feels begrudged. I'm not using the N-word, I'll just say begrudged. You get to the point and you think, fuck you. It doesn't actually make you want to work all the harder. But what they have on their side is, you don't work for Celtic, you work for the Celtic cause. And that's what the kind of unifying, that's what the bonding element was. That you weren't working for those guys in the suits or the kind of absentee landlord or whatever. You know, you're working because you love what you do and you love what Celtic represents to you. And it's not the same as what it represents to the money men. So they've got you over a barrel. And they exploited the emotional attachment. And they still exploit the emotional attachment, and they think it's good governance, and it does my box in.
So are they penny wise, pound foolish, Stephen?
Yeah, I think you've said it before, or other people have said it before. There seems to be we have to win every deal, you know. So it's like every deal is entered, every negotiation is entered into, like it's a deal. We have to be the winners, but I think there never seems to be. You know, let's see if we can find something that works for both sides. Or, you know, the money's almost irrelevant in the whole thing. They should have had, this is what we're going to do. You know, it seemed like a very easy thing to get done. O'Neill, Fotheringham, Maloney seemed very easy. Now, the back of forward, we've all heard, like, Sean Maloney seems to have been the more sticking point, because let's face it, I don't think Fotheringham's got a list of jobs to choose from.
Scaffolding?
Yeah, neither does O'Neill. I'm not sure Maloney does either, but maybe he has, you know, anyway. But they've got a sense of where they should be. The club's got a sense of where we should be, but that should have been it. It's kind of like the Eddie Howe thing. Why did it drag out for so long? It should have been okay. But what Celtic should have had was, well, if Maloney and Fotheringham don't become part of the thing, what's the plan going to be? And that's what really worries me, because what I was, you know, when Thursday night, it was like, Jesus, what's the plan going to be? When the club run the happy birthday Neil and Scott, and it was a picture of Lennon and Scott Brown, and everyone was like, oh my days, that's the coaching team. And thankfully you saw the happy birthday before you had the heart attack. I just don't, you know, Sirachi, we might go into that as well. That's another one that seems like an easy win. Do you know, O'Neill likes him. He's his wee pal. He's good in the dressing room. It sounds like a deal that we could get over the line. Just do it. We got the money in on in Amura. Just put out on Sirachi. But we don't.
So your point about every deal's got to be won. So I've thought for a while, and my level of business expertise is a minuscule level compared to, or business success is a minuscule level compared to Dermot Desmond. So it does sound odd to be saying, maybe Desmond doesn't know, but could part of the issue be that Dermot's
expertise is in businesses. The ones that he's been more hands-on with have been businesses that are business-to-business transactions. So it is about the deal. It is about maximising the deal. And in business-to-consumer entities, you've got to be more compromising. And so in a business-to-business thing, your final deadline point in Celtic's situation is, well, as long as Maloney's in the door at the start of the season, you've got your coaching staff when the season starts. Or for the day before, you know, as long as you got them in 1 second before pre-season starts, you've got all that time to negotiate the deal. Same with transfer windows. I do sometimes wonder whether their mentality, certainly Desmond's mentality is, well, I've got until the end of September or whatever date it is this season to negotiate the deal. I don't have to do the deal in July or the 1st of August. I've got right until that date. So that's the time I've got to do it, which is a mentality you would have in a business where that's all that matters. And you're not having to think about the wider impression of customers. Do you think that could be part of the challenge?
Yeah, but you're not, you know, it's not like, so, you know, I work in a business, it's got deadlines. Somebody's buying a property, they need to happen by a certain date. There's developers doing a project. Contractors need to be paid by a certain date. So, yeah, so I understand that Dermot might say, okay, for instance, these are the dates, right? But you've got a transfer window, you've got the start of the league season, you've got your Champions League campaign, you've got pre-season training. Surely it's better to have, you know, one of the issues we've had in the last couple of years is players haven't been in for pre-season, so they're not training with their teammates, they're not getting used to the, you know, the system of how the manager wants them to play. They're getting thrown into a very important game with very little notice. When you keep doing that and getting it wrong season after season, because if you look at our qualifying campaigns for the Champions League, nearly every season, that's your most important game. And it sets a barometer for the rest of the season. Now, ironically, 2003, when we got to the UEFA Cup final, we made a mess of the Champions League qualifying against a very good side, actually, that went on and were quite successful in the tournament. You know, but we just never seem to be, you know, I'm still waiting for Nir Bitton to turn out in centre-half this season. Or, you know, it's just which youngster we're going to pluck from, you know, obscurity to give a run out. And that's, I don't think that's how you run a business, you know, or run a football club. But if we'd done it and it worked, I could see why we said, well, look, this is what we're going to do because it works. But it doesn't work. Why keep doing it?
I suppose the counter-argument, and again, as Andrew and I kept having to chuck in the caveat, we did this podcast a week or so ago, the counter-argument would be, well, how many more league titles can we win? We've only not won one in the last 15 or whatever it is. You know, our model actually does work.
Stephen's talking about a specific Champions League. He's talking about Champions League qualifiers. 7 out of 9, I think, they've failed across different managers, different periods, different squads of players. That sounds like there's some kind of systematic problem, like there's some kind of fundamental issue that's not been addressed, and it's consistently not been addressed. If they want to put a deadline on it, put a deadline. You should say the deadline is a fortnight before your Champions League qualifiers. Now, this season, that would work next season, I suppose, but this season they could say a fortnight before is the start of the league season. So we've got to the start of the league season. But a fortnight before your first competitive game, whichever one comes first, whether it's a Champions League qualifier or whether it's your league opener, a fortnight before, because at the very least you would say you'd want a fortnight to bed in players. So why don't they work to that and say, surely everybody accepts that. Surely you understand football enough to say you'd be wanting your players in a fortnight before you're having a competitive game. What's wrong with saying that? What's wrong with setting that deadline? Always setting that deadline. So say the squad should be complete this season. The squad should be complete by July the 6th.
So again, in the counter-argument to that, Andrew, would be, well, does that mean that we don't sign any players once we've played competitive fixtures?
Well, no, if you've signed the 8 players that you're looking for.
Yeah, but what if we think we can get better? What if we think there's a couple of players that we think we can get
but just the nature of transfer windows, we're not going to get them until closer to the end.
Okay, well, what's the example of that? So if you can say, right, well, this is what when we've done that. So you could say Angie's first season, we got Jota and Carter Vickers at the end.
Juranovic, I think they were all the last.
I think they were quite late, weren't they, those two?
Yeah, those three, aye, even Juranovic.
And Giakoumakis as well. So they were maybe opportunities, right? But last season, we waited until the end. We got Tenekte, that nobody else wanted. He's probably not as bad a player as he might. He's not been a great player, and I think we overpaid for him. So he wasn't a player that, but look at what we did get. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't as good as Jacob Brim, for instance, who seemed to have a better profile, and we chased him and made bids for him and didn't get him. You know, Balogwisha was late in the window. You know, we waited and waited for him. We scouted, we followed him, we watched him. Although, you know, back to what you've said before, our scouts then didn't actually watch players play in the flesh because they might have realised that guy's not a Celtic player. I don't think he can be that bad, genuinely. I think there's probably a footballer in there, but we maybe don't have there's something not right at Celtic for him. But, you know, and that's a big part of any player. It's not just about the club there, but that's with any club, any team at any level, people need to be a right fit.
Yeah.
You know, and it did.
You can spend £100 million on one of the standout players of this World Cup. And it just comes to your club and he just doesn't work for some reason.
Mario Kempes, did he ever do anything apart from the 78 World Cup? What was it, 12-day wonder they used to call them, those players? That, I mean, look, they were talking the other night when there was the first half hat trick from Dumbelli in the first half hat trick, the first half hat trick since Zelenko. Zelenko scored 5 goals that in 1994 World Cup.
He signed for Rangers after that.
He signed for Rangers.
Yeah, yep.
And never
big money,
and it never really happened for him. Never truly happened for him. So yeah, you could sign, but even using my arbitrary deadline, if you want to call it, 2 weeks before the first league game. That's 2 weeks from now. Will Celtic have signed any players? Never mind completed your squad. Will they have signed any players?
I saw a list today. Somebody said, so say the players at the World Cup come back late. You know, like Japan could go late into the tournament. Okay, Tenekte's on the way back. Yang's on the way back. The Scottish boys are back for everybody. But, you know, some of the players might get extra time off. Trusty, for example, who's a key part of the team. Alistair Johnson. You know, so you could have players coming back late. So actually, they might say, well, they might not be ready to play in the first game. And I saw a list of what our team could be against Dundee, and it was quite frightening. We seem to have gaps everywhere. Brian Wilson said, we've got 8 players going to the World Cup. We've got really good players. They're not the 8 best players in the tournament. I don't want to denigrate any of them. They're not the player, you know, they're not 8 players that Paris Saint-Germain have got in the World Cup. There's different levels, isn't there? I think
just as an aside, just the nature of Scottish, which we'll get onto later. Just, I've got the Japan Brazil game on next to me. Ancelotti has just been sitting in the dugout, magnetic yellow and blue things on his tactics board, and he's now standing with the players showing them the tactics board with the magnetic yellow and blue. But apparently in Scotland that's the most ludicrous thing anybody could ever do. But anyway,
who was it that was doing it the other night as well?
I've seen a few of them do it. Jesse Marsh done it, did he?
Was it Jesse Marsh? Yeah.
He might have done it.
He had yellow.
The Japanese have got one as well now, actually. I'm just looking, they've got one.
He had yellow and red. See, I mean, as much as anything else, who told them? Could they not get any other marker colours but, you know, blue? Why did they have blue that day?
Because he probably brought his own.
If he did yellow ones, it wouldn't have been an issue. No, that's the sad thing. Yeah.
Even the blue just kind of topped all off. And
no,
it was
I thought it was
chucking
more
wet. It was the rain as well.
It was just raining. I thought it was more people having a go of, look how useless he is. He can't get his message across to the captain without having to do this silly tactics board. That's how I perceived it.
Yeah, which was ludicrous, which we called out at the time. We called out at the time that there's nothing wrong with using a tactics board. I think even me and Ross did we had a podcast and he had a tactics board.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, because he was showing me certain things, because he's really good at these, understanding these things and explaining it. He's good as well. Like, he doesn't get caught up in the gobbledygook of some other, like, would-be highbrow, like, Celtic fan sites. Like, I'm joshing. Guy, I'm joshing.
No, look, I like the guys on the huddle board, but honestly, Duco James will, and no doubt listening, Duco James will do some sort of Twitter thread, and two tweets into it, I'm like, yeah, this is like reading Tommy Sheridan would write, you know, why use 100 simple words when you can use 1,000 really ones that people need to look up a dictionary just to check what each of them means?
Oh, it's like, I thought I'd left that behind in when I was studying James Joyce and like at uni, you know. Finnegan's Wake. You ever read any Finnegan's
No.
Wake?
I had James Joyce and just couldn't do it. Oh, it was
Finnegan's Wake is just he takes language, he stretches it, he twists it, he pulls it apart, and it reads like a Duco James tweet on like
every time anyway, somebody mentions Finnegan's Wake, I always think of Finnegan's Rainbow, you know, with
Was Gene Kelly in it?
Was he not Fred Astaire? I know Petula Clark was in
Fred
it.
Astaire, sorry. Fred Astaire. Yeah.
Everything's in Glockamora. Anyway, yeah. I know my musicals better than I know my James Joyce. That's me, yeah. put my cultural cards on the table.
I'll tell you, but Brian, Celtic are driving me to drink, and you're probably going to ban me from, because my daughter's friends were here the other night. Here's one I prepared earlier. My daughter's friends were here the other night, and look what they left. It's their own colour as well. Why did they not have the green one?
Why did they not have the green one? As I say, I don't drink. I don't have any issue with alcohol.
Never drunk that. You ever drunk that, Stephen?
No.
No.
They should have. Anybody who's not a subscriber will not know what that reference is, Andrew.
Oh, right.
Because podcast was only for members of the Celtic Underground community, one of whom I met walking the dog just before this podcast, who I mentioned, I referenced, but he was commenting that I didn't name him, so it was Tony and his dog Biscuit. And I met him on the walk just before here, and he was agreeing with me. So there you go.
And if his dog runs away and you're looking for him and you see him and Tony doesn't see him, do you go, "See Biscuit"? That was a really long setup
for a really shit joke.
I don't think we're going to get into the comedy section on the podcasts now, so.
No. Are you a mate who continually, if somebody's taking advantage of someone, you'll see he was ridden like Sea Biscuit. So is he stock free for someone who's taking advantage of? Anyway, there's one for the horse. The horse people with into the horses. Back on
the... Nay, way.
Oh, God.
I think that's my taxi coming.
I had a brilliant joke there the other day, but it was really long, so I'm not going to do it on the podcast. I'll send you it afterwards. It's all about a talking duck. But back on Fotheringham and Maloney and just how Celtic drag out stuff to suck the life out of you. That's the issue for me. And I just always get the impression that the attitude is, look, we've got these deadlines. I don't understand why the fans are getting their knickers in a twist. Because as long as we have things in place by these deadlines, what does it matter if it's 10 seconds before or 10 weeks before? Getting back to your point, Andrew, it's about maximising our spend. So when you're David Murray, somebody wants £1 million a year, he was paying them two. Somebody wanted £1 million, we were driving it down to £750,000, and that's why we still exist and David Murray's Rangers don't. That would be, and we've managed
is
to...
Is this you saying this, or is this...
No. This is me.
Sorry, you always have to caveat it.
I know.
We should get a board up and say, not my...
Disclaimer.
Yeah, this is a board opinion. Like, we should get... This is a board opinion.
This is our perception.
These are not the opinions of Celtic Underground.
Yes, these opinions are not endorsed by Celtic Underground. No, I'm just saying, you can see how they might look at it and go, look, all these trophies in the bag, the most dominant team, we've grown money, and it's because we have looked after the pennies. We have sweated it out. We haven't just gone around and gone, hey, Sean, you want loads and loads of money? There you go, because we just want you in the door to keep all the fans happy. That would be their attitude. That we ended up, Maloney and Fotheringham are there, and we got them in, and we've saved, I don't know, 250 grand. Just pick a figure. We've saved 250 grand, right? Well, that 250 grand, as there are 250 grand, as there are... All we need to do is a couple of those 250 grand savings and we can afford an extra £1 million we can afford to go out and buy a £5 million player on 20 grand a week as a consequence of those minor savings.
I know that's the way they'll, think about it, but it's like, it's the absence of the middle ground. It's like Ross Desmond, and Ross Desmond's, I know that I'll probably get banned off Celtic Under for saying it. I mean, I was there, you were there, I was sitting beside you, Brian. But I didn't think it was quite as incendiary as most people did. But when he said, you know, if you swing and you miss, but who's asking them to swing? You're asking them to box clever, not swing. You're asking them to box clever. And sometimes boxing clever is just a few, you need to pay maybe more than you'd ideally like to pay in certain situations, because for the greater good. But that's what,
I don't think what you get. You have got some, there are people in the support, right, that will say, we've got 70 million in the bank. That's three £20 million players. Why don't we go and buy three £20 million players, right? And they don't think about the wages and the cut and what all the rest of it. But there's only about fucking five people out there that actually think like that. The rest of us don't want to do that. The rest of us just want that guy, his club want 5 million. We've offered two. Just offer four or four and a half, or just get, you know, if that's the guy that you want, and we've done the scouting properly, there are good footballers out there that we can get. And we've showed that because we've actually signed lots of really good ones. It frustrates me because I look and say, right, okay, how did we get Van Dijk, Matt O'Reilly, Hatate, Kyogo, Maeda? You know, how did we get all the... We seem to have the same process to get those players that we have to get Balikwisha, Inamura, Tony Kenny. It's very hit and miss, isn't it? So some things we're doing right, and we have to acknowledge and give credit for that. And maybe, you know, Brian, you've touched on it before. Maybe nobody's saying to Dermot, well done, Dermot. Do you know what? You've done a great job on all these things. I think we have to acknowledge all of that sometimes, right? You know, you look at some of the places where we are in terms of merchandising, where the club sits, you know, in the sustainability, you know, the club does really, really well. But being top dog in Scotland isn't, to me, as big an achievement as being in the top 10 clubs outside the top five leagues in Europe. Because we should be top in Scotland. Because the other lot died. For whatever way it died, they died. Well, the main competitors. Now, this season is going to be interesting. I don't think we should discount Hearts. I know some people go, yeah. You know, we've had that discussion in our chat. I'm not terrified of them, but I think we have to. If you look at what USG done, I think Hearts have got an easier path to do that than USG had, because the Scottish League isn't as competitive.
Yeah, I mean, I've said for years that I think the biggest, we get slaughtered. Celtic and Rangers get slaughtered because of the coefficient points that we've created. And they get, well, there's a free pass getting given to, for the last 25 years, to every other Scottish football club for their abysmal performances in European football. A complete free pass is given to them. And nobody turns around and says, why is one of Hibs, Hearts, Aberdeen, because they're the three with the biggest potential revenue, why is one of them not at least able to keep on the shoulders of Celtic and Rangers by being the best, by being substantially the best
everybody
of
else. Yeah.
Like Hearts
did
last.
I think Hearts will do that in the next 5 years. I'm not discounting Hearts, but I think the problem for Hearts is, see the inherent value in players who play in the Belgian League compared to the inherent value of players who play in the Scottish League. It's night and day. See what you see players getting sold 14, 15 million euros from Belgian teams. Would you ever see a Falkirk, where a Falkirk player, look, Falkirk's best player just got sold to Southampton for 1.5 1.2 million. But that player, if he played for Ghent or Genk, he could get sold for 14 million.
Mm.
So that's Hart's problem. And it's just because the way Scotland have performed in the World Cup, there's no going to be a kind of a nudge up in terms of people thinking you do well in the Scottish League. I know even a lot of these players won't be Scottish, but they'll just say, well, what the hell's the standard there?
Yeah, but that gets back to the abject performance of Hibs, Hearts, Aberdeen and all the other teams who've represented Scotland in European football in the last 25 years. Because they should be, particularly with the Conference League level, where if Hearts perform reasonably well in European club competition this season and get through to at least the knockout stage and then manage to repeat that next season, the season after, then you can start to see lesser Scottish players starting to go for higher sums of money.
You need something. I mean, when was the last time a Scottish club outside Celtic and Rangers qualified? And I don't mean they dropped down into because they couldn't drop any further, as Hearts, as explained, recent group stage participation from Scottish clubs outside of Celtic Rangers. It's just cascading down, which there's all going to go next season. Even the you cascade right out of competition. But the last 2 years, Scottish clubs have been in the group stage competition because they're just dropping down into it. They've no one ties to get.
Yeah, they drop down to the with a point where they can't drop any further, and they get into that competition. Yeah, that's my point. I mean, I think
that goes from next season. That goes from next season. So
I think Hearts have got a chance of being competitive. What I think could work against Hearts would be, and I think we discussed this before in a podcast, I think Hearts and Rangers won a watch. They both got somebody else resolving their
problem. Yeah.
Their problem manager that they didn't know what to do to resolve it, because both of them had a manager that deep down they probably suspected wouldn't be their manager beyond October, November time, and somebody's gone and paid them compensation to move their manager on. So the Rangers
have still got that manager. They've got another one of those managers.
Rangers have got a manager that suits them and his mahogany face matches the mahogany staircase.
We don't need all these personal insults. We don't need
Looks a joke, right? But they've got a guy who's behaving very staunch at the moment, and you can, you know.
He never wore brown brogues. Was it you who was saying that, Stephen? Yeah, he didn't wear brown brogues.
If you want personal insults on McInnes, you have to go on a different podcast. Really don't like McInnes.
Well, you know? I mean,
I've worked with the guy for 20 years.
Point
I've
of making
been in
is
his company plenty of times.
They've got a manager that suits them.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Hearts have now got a manager that suits them.
Yeah.
Better than McInnes did.
Yeah, yeah. But
in terms of what the owners want. The issue for me is, if Hearts get European football, will they be able to cope
with both?
Because that's usually what happens with a Scottish team. If they do get European football, they struggle to finish in the top six because they just kind of cope with weekend, midweek.
What happened to Hearts the last time, didn't it? They had the Conference League campaign and they finished bottom six the season before last, didn't they? So
that's right.
But then, you know, you look at Irish teams, like, you know, Shamrock Rovers have done well in the Conference League. Like, you know, that's where, you got to look at. I think the Scottish teams haven't been helped by the draws either. If you look at Hibs last year, I thought Hibs competed really well. I watched those games when he played Midtjylland because it was like the only football that was on at the time. And actually, they competed probably better against them than we did.
They were unlucky
then against Belgrade. Was it Partizan Belgrade they got next? And they were, you know, they actually competed okay. They didn't get a lesser team. So, like, some teams you need a bit of a favourable draw. Look like they might have got one this time. So it'd be interesting to see how they do. But, you know, you kind of want all the Scottish teams, obviously, other than Rangers, to compete okay in Europe because it benefits us all.
Well, Rangers benefited Celtic for long enough with their coefficient holes.
Coefficient
the
monkeys,
Thursday night monkeys, aye. Yeah.
You just want them to
That's
do
all
well.
Gone now.
You want well enough, but too well. But not too well.
Yes,
but not too well. Well enough to do the coefficient, some assistance, but not too well. Getting back to a point you just made, Andrew, about the quality in the Scottish League. But this is, again, where I think we need to change our mindset as a club. And that's, we've got a shortage of players who qualify under the homegrown process. So if it then means that we have to buy Bowie, that we think is a £4 million player, but he costs us six, for argument's sake, then that's just the world we've got to live in. Whereas I think we will go, well, we're not paying six because he's not worth six, and we move on and play European football with one player short on our...
Yeah, yeah.
In the total amount of players that we're allowed to play because we're not getting enough Scots.
Like Barney Stewart and Yamada, or Barney Stewart and Johnny Kennedy, those players are all of a similar level and they all cost round about the same. Barney Stewart is Scottish, he's going down south, and we've got an Irish guy and a Japanese guy that don't, you know, meet the criteria in terms of Scottish or even the quality. But if you're having foreign players, they should be... I was listening to somebody, they were talking about Scottish players to have in your squad. It should be the younger guys that you can bring through. So we should have had the likes of Hickey, the likes of the... Who was the Hibs player? Doig that went. Maybe you're better having guys at 21, 22 rather than maybe Luke McCowan at 27, 28 who's not going to really get much better. And that's no disrespect to McCowan. You know, he was good in stages last season. Big contribution in the Rangers match despite the slagging he got. But, you know, maybe those are the Scottish players we have to buy. Because the Celtic buying them, you probably get your money back. If we'd have bought Barney Stewart this summer, we could have sold him at the Championship for £2 million.
Yeah.
Next summer.
But interestingly, I was speaking to somebody who's close to Barney Stewart and knew about his contract. And he's now, I believe, on 12 grand a week basic. Celtic would never have paid him 12 grand a week. Because Dermot Desmond would have said, hold on a minute.
Yeah.
He's on £800 a week. Why on earth? This guy was playing Stirling University or whatever it was two years ago. Why on earth would we pay this guy 12 grand a week? So he's getting 12 grand and his bonus structure is such that he could be very, if he does anything and he's in a successful or a semi-successful team, he'll be on about 20 grand a week. So there you go about your kind of penny-wise, pound-foolish. We wouldn't see that, and that, I suppose that is different from the, because you tested Maloney, you think Maloney's not got any other gig to go to. Whereas with Barney Stewart, he could get that money elsewhere. He could get much more money. Celtic would offer him 5 grand a week, I would imagine.
Yeah, if you'd ask me where, because we have this sort of grade A, grade B, grade C sort of wage structure thing, he would be in the sort of 5 to 8 grand a week. That's what we would offer him.
But maybe you get him for that, ultimately. Like, Callum McGregor, Scott Brown, James Forrest could all have earned more money in England than they did at Celtic, undoubtedly, despite what that numpty zonal marking guy on The Athletic.
Yeah.
But, you know, despite what he did, those guys would all have been able to play in England and get more money than they did at Celtic. So there was a reason that they stayed at Celtic. Roy Keane got less at Man U than he was going to get at Blackburn because it wasn't just about the money. Now, that's not the same for every player. But there's got to be a level that, you know, and one of, you know, look at guys like Stuart Armstrong and Ryan Christie. So they came to Celtic, they were successful, they were probably getting paid less at Celtic than they might have got if they'd made that move straight to England. But actually, they probably got better moves to England or better wages when they did move to England off the back of how well they'd done at Celtic. You know, and that's what we've got to sell to people that come play for us. I don't think we sell the club well enough to
people
anybody.
People don't buy that. People don't buy it. Barney Stewart, both him and his representatives, his family are saying, Celtic are offering me 5. I'm getting 12 at Southampton.
Or 8.
I'm on the next flight down to Southampton.
Yeah, but,
and you know the thing that Peter Lowell used to always say when it came to wage renegotiations about when people were looking to renegotiate their wages? So it would be like, say somebody was on 12. And they would look for 20. And he'd say, no, you can't expect. Who gets an 80% wage rise?
He did.
It's like, probably not in the winner. He probably kept stepping
up.
He
did. No. When he went, when the Arsenal interest, you look at the accounts for that year to that year, Lowell's pay rise was off the scale.
Right.
Because it reflected the market rate for his job. That only works when it's in those jobs and not when it's in those fucking jobs, by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, it's only 6-3-3 or something without Champions League football. Don't forget.
You know, he might be a lovely guy. He's a lovely guy that's getting massively over fucking paid. Massively. You know, so that's where we pay the market rate. I'd love to know what the chief exec of Bruges gets, or Sporting Lisbon, all those clubs.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I'm meeting my USG season ticket holder pal on Wednesday night, so see if he can dig in here, because...
That's the guy we should have went for, Chris Lachlan at USG. He's the guy. Brian's Googling now about how much does somebody get paid.
Bournemouth's when president CEO earns an annual fixed salary of €300,000 supplemented by a €300,000 performance bonus based on the club's success, totaling
€600,000.
Federico Varandas,
which club is that?
CEO of Sporting Lisbon.
Okay, so he gets less than Michael Nicholson. Significant. He gets €500,000. €600,000 is about €500,000, isn't it? 550.
And his basic.
And he got to the last 16 of the Champions League.
His basic is 250,000. That's with the bonuses. He's getting €500,000. So his basic is £250,000. So it's half of what Michael Nicholson's basic is. They'll say it's different within Portugal, the average wage of an executive of a company.
They don't have to put their wage through St. Aloysius in Portugal, in fairness. You know, we've got that in Glasgow that they, you know, we have to, plus the security and stuff like that. But look, it's not, we looked at, remember the dafty that Rangers had that's now out in
Saudi.
Somewhere? Who was
it? Yeah, James Bisgrove.
Martin Bain was the first one. And then the other
Martin
guy.
Martin Bain, right.
Bain was getting stupid money as well. But that was when they're not the model. But we should be looking at Europe and benchmarking against, and benchmarking what they do. I genuinely don't know what Michael Nicholson does.
But we don't know what any of these...
Because we don't communicate very well.
But you're not going to say chapter and verse. That's one of those ones. What does that mean? I don't know what Gavin Strachan does. I don't know what this chief scout does. Well, I don't know what any of these guys do.
But why don't we, you know, so in the last few years, so I've read stuff on Brentford's website, Bournemouth's website, Brighton's about what, you know, so Brighton had the guy, Paul Jewell's son was the head of scouting at Brighton, and he kind of came up through the levels. He started off at Newport.
Does that not sound like nepotism? It was somebody in the game.
Yeah,
probably
he didn't get a job off the back of his dad, actually, because he never worked for any clubs. I think the first phone call he's made, his dad said, look, would you ever have a look at him? And then if he's shit, send him home, sort of thing. And he wasn't. So he made his career himself and done very, very well. But there was a great interview on the Brighton website, and he talked about how he'd learnt Spanish. And, you know, so when they were going to interview these young South American kids that they were trying to bring over, you know, that Brighton were very successful, that he would go and he would sit in the house with them and their parents. And they loved the fact, fuck, Mark Cooper can speak Spanish, but we're not making any bloody, you know, we're not making anything out of that. Do you know, like, tell us.
Terminado. Terminado. Yeah. I remember, you know, that one, like, time.
I think what we do at Celtic is, well, if we don't tell them, it doesn't matter. Whereas actually, you know, I would have liked the whole Nancy thing. If you'd had a bit of background on his coaching staff, people might have given them a bit more sympathy. They might have got, you know, the whole thing when Nancy was doomed to failure from the start, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think. And a lot of that because people didn't really warm to him or we didn't like him. Whereas Ange, we warmed to straight away. We were still the day before Ange, most of us were going, who's this guy? I still love listening to the Alan Brazil, you know, that moron and him and McCoy's going on about Postecoglou and just some of them balloons up. Like, as soon as Ange spoke, we loved him. We bought into it because he, you know, we went, okay, do you know what? We're not listening to what anyone else says. He's our guy. No one else is going to slag him. He's ours. And I don't think Nancy got that. And look, maybe he would. He didn't.
Personalities are different.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I don't think he helped himself. Anyway, I'm going down a rabbit hole here. Like,
no. I know what you're saying.
Spoilers for people listening. We're doing this in the Brazil-Japan game. In the 6 minutes of injury time, Brazil's just made it 2-1.
Good job I didn't pause my telly there, by the way, which I was going to do. But I knew somebody would tell me to score.
Well, at least Maeda's back for how long, we don't know.
I was just going to say, so that means at least we've got a striker back in the building.
He's rolling back. But I mean...
So just to what drag this conversation...
I know I saw that Martin O'Neill was getting stick for saying we need a couple in, but he's not going to say I need eight in. You'd never say you need eight
in. I just took that as...
It's a filler word to demonstrate
there's more than one.
That's how I
took it. But people are like, oh, couple. Couple's two. That's rubbish.
Yeah. But you should have said a few instead of a couple. It would be a better generic word to fit in.
They used to always say, you know, we need some guys in just to kind of, just to help the guys that are here. They don't want to say, just to replace the shit players that are here.
So what do you make on all the changes? Because I want to bring this part of the podcast to a close before we do the bit for the see your subscribers. What do you make of us, Andrew, bringing in a specialist set-piece coach the Hearts specialist set-piece coach?
I could only see that as a positive. I could only think that's got potential, surely. That's one of the few. In fact, no many things unites us on the CU chat group, does it? But we all went, all right, good. That sounds promising. Did we know?
We did. And I think it is. I personally think it's a promising thing. I know Gavin Strachan was doing a set piece coaching and he's left and gone to West Brom. But if you look at Hart's success at set piece coach, at set piece.
Yeah. He's like this guy he's worked with under Austin McPhee, didn't he? Who's excellent. You know, he's got terrible hair. But apart from that, he's actually a very good, you know, you look at him at Villa and with the Portuguese side, he's one of the best, if not the best, in the game at that. So the fact that this guy's worked with him, you know, at first when I saw his name was Grant, I assumed he was going to be related to Peter because, you know, that's what we do. But he doesn't look like he is. He doesn't do any pointing when he's doing the setting up of the free kick routines. I think it's a good move. It's funny, as you said, on all Celtic cyberspace that I'm on, everyone was like, we done a good thing. Wow, it's like shit, maybe we're going to do something else good. Like, it was like, this is what, and this is all we need, a few biscuits, like, you know. Yeah, chuck us a few
sea biscuit.
Sea biscuit, whatever. It's just little things like that, actually. And you go, well, actually, that is a really good move, I think, because that supplements that. And, you know, I always felt a bit sorry for Gavin Strachan, because it was an assumption that he's only there because he's Gordon Strachan's boy. I don't think that's the case.
That's just for St. Anthony.
I genuinely don't. But if you had an interview on the website with Gavin Strachan, even if it was a fluff piece, my favourite player when I was a kid was this guy, blah, blah, I used to do this, blah, blah, blah. You know, what's your Celtic connection? Well, I done something like that just takes away from that. He's not just got the job because he's Gordon Strachan's boy. And that's, I think we do ourselves a disservice with that because, you know, people always assume John Kennedy's his defensive coach. He was never the freaking defensive coach.
Although people had listened to the podcast when we interviewed John Kennedy.
Yeah.
And I asked him specifically and he said, no, he's a first-team coach and they don't have someone who specifically is the defensive coach.
Billy Connolly. Billy McNeil wasn't only the defensive coach when he was the manager. Like, Billy coached all the fucking players.
Yeah. And this is my irritation about our communication again and the decision to not engage with social media. Now, I'm sometimes a bit betwixt and between. I couldn't care less about Celtic Underground. This is not about Celtic Underground getting access. I couldn't care less. It's actually one of my irritations looking on sometimes. And I'll see people from other Celtic fan websites saying stuff that I know to be utter bish. But it's negative, because negativity sells. And in the void that Celtic create by having no information getting out there, people fill it with negativity. Yeah. So you get that nonsense thing. I always remember, you know, Brendan's first season back, at the end of that first season, I think I've said that on here before, speaking to someone very, very close to Brendan. They got one of his mates to calculate, to look up and check how many times Celtic had been linked with a player. Celtic are interested. From memory, it was either 92 or 96. Can't remember how many, but I think it was 96 players in the first season of Brendan back that Celtic were linked with. And he said, we actually had any interest at all in four of those 96. But what happens is, this player that an agent is pushing the narrative, so for example, the Sarachi situation at the moment, Sarachi only wants to sign for Celtic if he gets more game time than he got last season. But his agent also sees that Celtic's a good option, but his agent's also trying to tell other clubs that he's available. So his agent's pushing this story out about how shit Celtic are. And then Celtic fan websites are leaping onto this about how shit are we that we kind of get the Sarachi deal over the line. Well, the issue actually is that Sarachi's asking for game time that Celtic can't guarantee him. But there's other players that you see even worse than that, that you have. There was one, I can't remember who it was, in January. Now, I spoke to people directly involved at Celtic. Nobody had even looked at this player to the extent of his data had come through, perhaps, and we'd gone, no. But this player was getting pushed so far along the lines of Celtic are really interested in him. And then when we don't sign him, everyone then gets pissed off that we've fucked up another deal. Yeah. And then you're reading this stuff and you're thinking, but I know for a fact we haven't mucked up this deal because we were never interested in this player. But people take that information. So part of my irritation, Andrew, is the locking out of social media. We have, in the modern parlance, influencers. That's what, if you were to take it away to another...
Content creators.
Great. Content creators, influencers, whatever you want to do, right?
There's a my nephew, Giovanni.
He's a content creator.
When he was doing his radio interview in Boston, the guy said, oh, you're an influencer. I said, oh, never use that word. He says, what are you then? I'm a content creator. If it's good enough for my 19-year-old nephew, it's good enough for me.
But all of these sites are content creators then, right? And their content that they are filling it with is negativity. But for so many of these sites, it's become what they do is the living for the people who do it. Negativity sells better than positivity, so they're piling this they're piling negativity in to make stuff happen. Celtic could give them content currency for these people. Celtic could give them tons of content. Getting back to Stephen's point, Andrew, Celtic could get them in. Celtic should have had them into Lennox Town when Lennox Town was empty.
Yeah.
During the close season.
That's my cat. That's my cat. If it's your dog, my cat.
Your
horse. Is there not a horse? Was it a horse? Horses, dogs, cats. Animal Farm. Like, we've gone from Joyce to Orwell.
You've got a lovely pussy there, Andrew. That's all I can say.
Mrs.
Slocum. But, you know, Celtic should be exactly one for the kids. Celtic should be using, should have had people into Lennox Town. Give them a tour of Lennox Town. Give them a tour of the new Barrowfield. Because content's king, content's currency.
But it fills a gap as well.
And you might be able to flip the narrative from this always negative to move it. You can move it a wee bit.
It's no difficult as well, as you say, inviting them into the new complex.
Phil Giles at Brentford is very good. They talk about, so at the end of the summer, they might sit down and say, right, this is how the transfer window went. They won't go in. There's obviously certain things that they can't say. We offered this guy X, Y, Z. He turned, you know. But they go into it and it's quite open and it's quite generic about what they do. But people buy into it because it's communication. And it's so there's not as much noise around those clubs as there is around Celtic, obviously. They're not the same. So
did Chelsea do it?
Chelsea, I don't know if they do bits of it, but like it tends to be those smaller clubs. Those
Brentford,
are the ones I look at. I see them as a good model. But Bruges done something recently, or not Bruges, Feyenoord have taken the guy that was the sporting director at Bruges, and he's gone to Feyenoord, and he came out and issued something, and it was a bit of a presser. Talked about what they're going to do and what they're looking at, and they got rid of Van Persie, and they brought in Van Bronckhorst. But it wasn't a loads and loads of communication, but it was like enough that people go, all right, right, that's what they do. I get that. We'll go away and we won't moan about it. But we just leave and we're so bad at communication. And that, Brian, you're absolutely right. What happens in the noise or in the gap, and those that make the most noise get the most attention.
Mm-hmm.
And we love Celtic fans. Andrew, you worked in the press. You'll know this better. But Celtic fans love negativity. So we like to be able to moan about what's in the Daily Record. And if they say something shite about us, we'll buy it so we can moan about it. The Rangers fans are the opposite. They like moonbeams, jets in. You know, Rangers have signed a new £20 million England player today on loan. You know, the fact that he's duff or whatever doesn't matter. But they need all the positive headlines because that's what they buy into. Whereas we, whether it's our dour Catholic Irish background, we like a bit of misery.
Hair shirts. We're
never
slipping on the hair shirts.
We're fucking self-flagellating shit. And like,
self-flagellation,
We like misery. You know, my wife says that about, she said, but that's a Scottish thing. You all seem, you're never happier than when you're all fucking miserable. Yeah.
There's definitely a part of that within Celtic.
See, I only came across that when I hit social media because, not to say, but I only ever thought positively and only ever wanted to hear positive news about Celtic and the social environment. And I actually put it down the opposite way. I put it down to the Catholic faith and having Catholic schools and the element of believing in something that any rational review of the facts would tell you wasn't true, but you still retain the faith. So that I actually had the opposite. I used to think opposite until I hit social media. So I was stunned when I started doing social media stuff and website and stuff and found what a bunch of money gets the Celtic supporters. Because my only experience of Celtic support was the complete opposite. That they were not money gets.
Yeah.
You just got happy friends, Brian.
But they had faith in the 90s when everything told you you shouldn't have.
It's not always moaning, but it's just, it's worrying. It's the angst. It's not always just spitting out and kind of whinging. Sometimes it's just angst.
Do you think
there's a natural distrust
of people in authority?
Yeah. Well, that's, I think that's a Celtic suit. Whereas, you know, when you talk about Rangers fans, he wears a suit and he's got, they're better than us. Because he wears a suit and he's got a tie and he's got brown shoes. And, you know, the royal family are better than us. The people that private education are better than us. Whereas we're the opposite. We think we're better than them and we need to bring them down. You know, that's, where's he going?
The tall poppy. I think he's going to get the dog out the way. I was worried about my cat, but she seems to have settled down. So at least we've got half of the animals. We don't care what the animals do. What?
I asked my son's Deliveroo. I've never used any delivering thing ever. And the reason I don't use it is because they are leeches sucking money off the business that's selling it. The amount of money that they cream out of the retailer is a disgrace. So I would never. So if you're listening to this, do not use Uber Eats, Deliveroo, Let's Eat, Just Eat, whatever they're called. Don't use any of them. They just suck money out of the.
Walk to your carryout shop.
Get the telephone number of the carry-out shop and phone them direct yourself.
Andrew, you've turned Brian into a lefty. he's rallying against consumerism and big corporate.
Don't use.
He'll have his Che Guevara t-shirt on for the next podcast.
No, I just understand. You're Wolfie Smith. You'll be up against the wolf.
Do you know what my wife bought me about 3 years ago? I says, I'll wear that as a nightshirt, but I don't really think I can wear it. See, with a hammer and sickle and all that. And it was just, I think it was about the, it was about 2 months before the invasion of Ukraine. I thought, I don't think that would get down well. I did buy, when I went to China, I did buy Chairman Mao's wee red book, must admit.
I thought you didn't like murder and genocide and stuff like that.
Well, no. sometimes it best intentions and it goes a bit wrong, yeah. You know.
Yeah. Okay,
I'm a big fan of Mao and Stalin and any other mass murderers. Chuck them all in, Pol Pot. Chuck them in.
You know, I've seen Trotsky. He was like, been in his office where he get his ice pick and all that in Mexico City.
Did you sing a Strangler song? I can't help but have the Strangler song in my head every time anybody ever mentions Trotsky.
It was a moving moment. You know, the museum, which is his house and whatever, where Frida Kahlo and all that hung out and everything at that point, they were friends and everything. Diego Rivera and all that, her husband and everything, and the other artist. But we went along on a Monday and we got to the door and it's this museum and this guy, he was kind of but army fatigues on and all that kind of thing. Because you got a lot of that in Mexico. It was almost kind of, there was a militaristic thing going on. He says, oh no,
did he have museum. big glasses, big
and one of those kind of hats, you know, the soft hats. Woody Allen's bananas or something. So he said, nah, it's shut on Monday. And I looked up guidebook. Oh God, it's shut on Monday and I'll never be able to get back here because it's quite outside Mexico City. Well, it's not right in the centre. And it took 8 minutes to get there. And then I flicked on the guidebook. This was in the old days in the '90s when you had guidebooks. It said, you can bribe most people for most things in Mexico City. I said, I've got $20 here. Does it open up? On you go, come through. So it was, I thought, there's maybe something no right about bribing a guard to go in and see where Trotsky breathed his last. I don't know, doesn't he quite all fit together?
Probably fit with Stalin's culture.
Yeah, well, Stalin that got him bumped off, but, you know.
I mean, and so you're probably fitting with his culture to pay somebody off. Anyway, back on to...
Sorry.
So I will say, I think that's enough Celtic chat for tonight. And I will say, Stephen and Andrew, thanks very much.
Good night.
Thank you.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address, and then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.